Welcome to Truth, Lies, and Cover-Ups. I'm Tracy Brown, the fraud-busting body language expert. I've spent the last 20 years reading people, uncovering secrets hidden in plain sight to find the truth in crimes, politics, and billion-dollar business deals. And I want you to be able to tell whose pants are on fire, make better decisions, and build your bottom line as well. Get ready. Let's dive in. I got something a little bit different here today on Truth, Lies, and Cover-Ups. I got Texas attorney Ken Good with me. Now, he has argued in front of the Texas Supreme Court and now focuses his work on the bail bond industry, doing its best to make sure the industry regulations actually protect the public. Turns out a lot of them don't these days. We'll also talk about our thoughts on Dog the Bounty Hunter. He's one of my favorites. The Magna Carta. Didn't know anything about that. And unlicensed funeral homes. Also, we'll talk about what happened when his client lied to him, but he didn't find out until the middle of the court proceeding. You're going to enjoy this. Hi, it's Tracy, and I am back with what I know is going to be a super interesting episode here on Truth, Lies, and Cover-Ups. I got Ken Good in the house. How are you, Ken?
I'm in the house.
You're in the house, and that is something. Now, you're coming from Houston, right?
I'm coming from Tyler, Texas.
Oh, Tyler. Okay. I grew up in Dallas, so I know all about Tyler. It won't be long. Y'all be getting your roses in, huh? Here's what's interesting about you is that you are a bail attorney.
I am. And I do have an office in Houston. I have an office in Houston and Tyler.
Okay. So I wanted to chat with you because I don't know anything about bail or how it works or why someone would need an attorney. Here's what I know. Is that when you're driving along in the bad parts of town, there's these little offices with bars on the windows that say bail bonds. So can you take us through the process? Like, how does this really work? Like, and then what's your part in it?
Well, okay. So bail goes all the way back to England. I mean, that's how long it's been around. I mean, it really kind of, the history of bail dates back to the Magna Carta, where the king for the first time put limits on his ability to hold somebody.
Oh.
So before the Magna Carta, if he accused you of a crime, he could hold you. And if the case never went to trial, you would just die in jail.
Oh,
and so that was the first time the king put restrictions on his ability to hold people.
Mm-hmm.
And so bail is kind of arisen from that concept. It doesn't have anything to do about innocence or guilt. It has everything to do with what assurances are you willing to give to the court that you will come back to respond to the charges that have been filed against you?
Mm-hmm.
In a lot of the state constitutions, the only constitutionally protected right of release is the private surety system. So like the Texas Constitution says, unless you're charged with these things where they can detain you, you have a right to bail with sufficient sureties, which means the private industry. Anything else, cash bonds, free release, personal bonds is what they call it in Texas. It's called other things in other parts of the state, can be taken away at any time. And if they can take them away, you can be held. If they get rid of the private surety system, then you can be held. And it goes back to the way it was before the Magna Carta. Mm. And so, you know, the private industry gets attacked, but it's your only protected way to get released that they cannot take away from you. And so the purpose of bail is to ensure that you're going to show up for court. And if you don't, then we have to find out why you didn't, get you back as soon as possible. There's incentives for getting you back because as soon as your case comes back, we can get it back on track. We can get justice to the victims. We can get you either guilty or innocent and get your case resolved. Because if you don't show up for court, criminal cases are unique. Your case has to be put on hold until you come back. And so that's what creates backlogs. And that's why we're seeing such terrible actions right now with these reform measures that are being proposed because none of them are tested. None of them are true. None of them have any research that say they work. And all of them carry very high failure to appear rates. And so with a high failure to appear rate creates backlogs. And that's why you're seeing chaos created in our urban areas. And that's why you're seeing crime go up because chaos creates pressure to dismiss cases and dismiss cases is de facto decriminalization.
Interesting. Okay. So let's talk about, so a bail bond is essentially a deposit. Is that right?
No.
No.
Well, a bail bond is a promise by the bonding company. If your bond is set at $10,000, it's a promise by the bonding company to pay $10,000 to the county if you don't show up for court.
Got it. Okay. So then if so how much does it cost? Like, let's someone off the street or like their family comes in, they need to bail this guy out. How much does it cost them to get that $10,000 bond?
It depends on where you are. Like in Texas, we don't regulate how much bondsmen charge, but by and large, I think the industry average is about 10% of the face amount of the bond is the premium for the bond to be posted.
10%. So, okay. So for 10%, you can get out of jail. Is that
Yeah,
correct?
and you in Texas currently, that can be even on a payment plan. So if you're a $1,000 bond, it can be $100. It could be $20 down in a payment plan.
Okay. So this starts to make more sense to me because you know one of the shows I really like to watch is Dog the Bounty Hunter. Not because of I just like to see Hawaii. Really.
Well, you know, Dog is not about a not a bondsman, but he is a recovery agent, is what
Right.
we call them. You know, bondsmen in Texas don't have the right to rearrest. So if you have somebody who refuses to come back, and you have to find them, and they either call the police or hire somebody that does have the ability to rearrest. And Dog the Bunny Hunter is an example of a person would be a recovery agent. He's, of course, a more flamboyant one
Oh,
and
yeah.
one that everybody recognizes. Some people would say he gives the bail industry a bad name, but you know, he is one of the essential parts. If someone does not agree to come back to court, then we have to get them back to fulfill our promise.
So then he would get paid by the bond company, is that right? Like per head, I guess. But
Well, it's
then.
again, that usually is about 10% of the face amount of the bond. So if we charge 10%, but we don't get, you know, it's a payment plan and they don't pay it, and then they fail to show up for court, and then we have to hire a recovery agent. Sometimes we pay 10, it may even be more depending on the bond. So we're going to lose money on that bond. And if we don't get them back, we're going to pay the whole amount of the bond to the county.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. So that's how it works. There's reform out there that maybe is not thought through enough, let's just say. So, okay, what's the craziest case you've been involved with?
Well, you know, there's always cases where there's tragedy, but let's kind of stay away from tragedy and let's say just crazy case. Probably the craziest case that I've seen right now, recently, I'm calling it the unlicensed killing field, where we have someone running an unlicensed a funeral home, and a man and a wife are arrested for having all kinds of funerals, and they're not embalming. They're being charged with mishandling dead bodies, and on and on and on. And the problem is, both of these people have substantial criminal histories. Both of them, I mean, the female involved had seven previous convictions, or somewhere around there. In Texas, if you have two previous felony convictions, you can be held without bond. And, you know, they kept getting more bonds. I mean, the gentleman, his name is Javier Major. He's 26 years old. He's had seven previous cases and he's failed to appear in every one of them. So every time he gets a bond, he fails to appear. And so he's had seven previous felony convictions. The court had the grounds under Texas law to deny bond. And same with the woman involved as well. So what did the court do? Granted him a $10,000 bond. A surety bond and granted her a personal bond, so she got out of jail for free.
So then what's your involvement in this? Like, how does this all come together?
Well, how this comes together is from our standpoint, you know, we have, let me say, so how does this come together? You know, there was a case pushing bail reform in Harris County,
And
in
that's
federal
Houston,
court in
Harris County,
Houston, and
Houston.
it was called O'Donnell versus Harris County. And I was asked to go to that. Go to an early hearing just to see what I thought about the case because I had kind of have an appellate background. And I watched that case and I'm like, this case is going south. And the judge is misreading it, misapplying the law. And I said, we have to become experts on this issue, on these issues. And so we have set out to become, or I have set out to become experts in this area of the law on the federal litigation, what can or cannot be done. And so I've written numerous articles on bail reform, what works and what doesn't, on the case law. I've been proven correct by this judge or about this case because this judge has now been reversed six, seven, eight, nine times. And the most recent ruling from the Fifth Circuit said the case I went to the hearing on should have never been filed in federal court. But we're still living under the ramifications of that ruling. I would say both of the examples in the unlicensed killing field are a direct result of that case, because previously they would have denied bail because of their criminal histories. And instead, not only did they not deny bail, they didn't even report these cases on what bail they set to the state. And they're required to do that. I checked the database this morning, and they're still not being reported to the state.
Okay. So then how do you get involved in cases? Like what would make someone say, you know what, it's time to call Ken?
Well, you know, there's a lot, you know what, like my phone rings a lot. Let me give you some examples of why people would call Ken. I had a brief due at the Texas Supreme Court yesterday. And so I was working for weeks on it. And that issue is dealing with something with a bail bond board. They enacted a rule that we think is improper under Texas law. And so I filed a petition for review, appealing it to the Supreme Court because we didn't like what the trial court ruled or what the Court of Appeals ruled. Another reason why people call me mostly is because, you know, bond forfeitures. When someone fails to appear for court, a bond is forfeited, and then they
so they lose their, let's say, 10 grand.
No, that starts the lawsuit over it, and then we have things we have to do. And so my job is to make sure the right judgment is entered. If we satisfy certain requirements, it's a reduced judgment. And sometimes it's just negotiating with the county if we think we have mitigating facts, but most of the counties just follow the law. So like Harris County, you have so much time to get them back in, rearrested. And so we're monitoring those times, getting people back to jail. And then once they get back, we're notifying the county that they've been rearrested, and we're asking for an agreed judgment for what the law requires. Another reason why I get called a lot is, you know, getting somebody licensed so that they can write bail if there's an issue, or we think there's going to be an issue. And then, you know, just I'm active in the legislature. We testify on bills about whether they're good for the criminal justice system or bad for the criminal justice system. And so I get calls from people about that. I got a call today asking for if I would meet with a group who wants to talk about something that the attorney general has going on right now. And then, you know, just really, I look at it like you got a fire that's burning and you call me. And I try to get it put out for you.
Wow. Okay. So how did you become, like, why bail? You could be an attorney for anything. You went to Texas Tech, Hardin Simmons. I mean, these are not rinky-dink little places, right? And you're doing, like, you could do anything. Why bail?
You know, when I started out as an attorney, I really think I was trained by one of the best defense attorneys in the state. And when I started out, I was doing medical malpractice defense.
And
we were defending doctors and hospitals when they got sued. I was on court TV really early in my career, and we won that case. And I argued a case at the Supreme Court of Texas very early in my career. You have to be licensed for 5 years before you're eligible to take the board certification exam. And I took it. I mean, I was eligible with all the other requirements after year four. And I was always busy in appellate work. So when we went to a seminar on medical malpractice, they had a section on new and important cases from the Court of Appeals. Three of the cases were mine. And so as a result of my appellate work, a bondsman had a whole bunch of problems, fires. And he said, well, what kind of attorney do I hire for this? And they said, you need an appellate attorney. And so someone recommended me, and that's, I got that straightened for him. And then word of mouth, that you got an issue, you need to call Ken. It's just like everything else. Since then, I just start getting calls, and it's now developed into its own little practice. I mean, I've even developed my own software for monitoring cases that automatically sends out notifications to clients so that, you know, big bondsmen who have multiple offices can use it to track their bond forfeitures. And so, you know, I liked difficult issues, and so
I guess
I like puzzles that other people can't put together, and so I try to put them together.
Okay. So,
Now let me say, and because I really clicked with the bail bond industry, I think they are blue collar people. I think my background is blue collar. My parents were public school teachers. My grandfather was a sharecropper. And so I really like the people. They're great. I mean, we have second generation bondsmen, third generation bondsmen. And so I just really think we just clicked from a personality standpoint, because I think the bail bond industry is personal relationship driven. And so I just think these are wonderful people that do a great service for our community.
Wow. Okay. So then, what is it like arguing a case in front of the state Supreme Court?
Well, it can be intimidating. I argued a case before the Fifth Circuit one time when I was very young. And when I was young, my biggest problem is I wasn't shy enough. And so, like,
Oh, really?
and I always looked a lot younger. I mean, I'm older now, so I don't look as young as I
I don't
used
know. You
to.
look
But,
pretty good, Ken. You look pretty good.
well, I'm 63 now. So
Are you kidding me? No, you're not.
imagine when I was 29 and graduated from law school. I went to Vegas to celebrate, and they tried to kick me off the gambling floor by saying I was too young to be there. And so, first hearing I ever went to, the judge said, "Well, when your dad gets here, we'll start." So, when I went to the Fifth Circuit to argue my first case, one of the judges asked me a question, and they were so smart. They were just, I mean, they were some of the older judges, and so they were. And I looked at that judge and I said, "I don't even know what you just said. I don't. There's no.
Oh
There's no way I can answer that question. I don't even know what you
no.
just said." Well, we all laughed. Well, but and so that's probably why I like arguing. I mean, the first time I argued the Supreme Court, you've got nine people sitting in front of you in a half circle. They, as soon as you start talking, they start answering questions, and so you really don't have an argument. You have an outline of your whole argument, and you're just trying to work it into answers to questions. So it's kind of like the whole fire. You're in a fire, and you've got things rapid fire going to you. I love it. I've loved it ever since I've been in law school.
Wow. So can you talk about that Supreme Court case? Like what a little bit like with some
The first one I argued, well, let me argue about the first one I argued at the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals, because Texas has two high courts, and one for criminal issues and one for civil. The criminal court, the Court of Criminal Appeals governs or decides bail issues. And so I've argued two of the most important cases in the bail industry at the Court of Criminal Appeals and won both cases. I think I won them both 9-0. But the
And
first,
what were those? Can you get into it a little bit?
sure, one of them was an issue of the way the Harris County was calculating interest. So, like, when somebody was rearrested, interest is calculated on that bond amount from the date they failed to appear in court until they are rearrested. Harris County was calculating interest until they returned to Harris County, so their interest was always higher, but that's not what the statute said. And so then we got into a whole fight about what court costs there are in a bond forfeiture case. And so the case that I took to the Court of Criminal Appeals was talking about what's the proper appellate court costs, because they were charging filing fees when you file an appeal, but they're a criminal appeal and you don't have a filing fee in a criminal appeal. So they agreed with me, and they told all the courts of appeals in Texas to change what they were doing. And then probably the most important case I argued was on the we have a statute on what we're required to do when somebody fails to appear for court, and a district attorney got mad at me, and so they had the statute declare unconstitutional. And so we appealed it, and the Court of Criminal Appeals held the statute constitutional. And I'll say there had been two previous versions of it that were held unconstitutional. So the third version, the one when I went to the Court of Criminal Appeals, they finally held that it was constitutional. And that one was a great case, because the courthouse was full. The courtroom was full. There was not an empty seat in the room, and it was all bondsmen. And they had to take a break before we started because they said there was a person reported in the neighborhood with a gun. And I was like, "Okay, which bondsman's carrying a gun in here?" Nobody.
Well,
It wasn't us.
so I spoke down next. Now, is the Supreme Court, is that in the Capitol, Texas, or where is it?
It's right close to it. It's in a building next to, so it's on the property.
Well, I spoke at the hotel there right next to the Capitol, and the it was for some insurance folks, and they were all going over to talk to their representatives when they were done. And I have never seen anything like this. They said there was a they their lobbyists got up there, to talk to them, tell them what to do, like when they got to their appointments and things. And he goes, look, if you're carrying a gun, there's a separate entrance. It's right over there. And I was like, oh my God, what is going on here? Like, if
Well, and if you have a concealed carry license, you get to go a separate way. I mean, even if you're not carrying a gun, that they'll just scan that and let you in. But you can, we have open carry in Texas, so you can carry a gun in the Capitol, but you have to go through a separate entrance.
But then they, but then at your court hearing, they were worried that someone had a gun.
Well, you know, we don't allow guns in the courtrooms. You know, when we have violence in courts, it's usually over family law issues. I mean, we had a shooting in Smith County at the courthouse, and it was a family law issue. We have a court of appeals. The Fort Worth Court of Appeals years ago had an oral argument, and several judges got shot up during the oral argument, and it was a family law case. So, family law cases don't really mix well. I mean, people, I mean, I've always heard when people go through a divorce, they go crazy for a period of time. And you know what? I think that's true.
Well, yeah, and when you say family law, it's usually custody of a
Yeah, I
young
think
child.
it's, yeah, I mean, I think when you're ending a relationship that you had were so invested in, I think that brings out the worst in us.
Oh, it does. Yeah. Well, that's those are usually some of the a high number of the investigations that I get called to work on are child custody, because what's going on now is these lawyers go, hey, you want the kid? All you got to do is accuse your spouse of sexual abuse on the kid, right? So it gets real heated in a hurry.
Well, and you know, if they're not valid, you know, if the allegations are made up, that gives everybody a bad name. I mean, it
Oh,
just
it's terrible.
gives the whole legal industry, the courts. I mean, because you know, the courts have to decide what's the reality. But then let's do the opposite. You're in a situation where you're being abused, but you have a kid and you want out. And sometimes they have to compromise to get out by allowing the abuser to see the children.
Oh,
And that
totally. I had a
seems
case like
really,
that.
really, it just seemed just as bad as the opposite.
Absolutely. Okay, so basically the bottom line here is that there's laws going in that's letting people out of jail too soon, right? Or if at all, or if
Well, no, I think what the problem is, we have been trying, you know, okay, the bail reform movement started with the way we're doing bail is unconstitutional, so we got to change it. And that's the way they started. The problem is the courts have now held the opposite. They've held bail's constitutional. The private surety bail system is constitutional. So now they're saying, well, we need to be more fair. And so now they're saying, well, we need to try all these other things. They've never been tested. They've never been researched. They've never been verified. And they are just awful. They carry high failure to appear rates. And that creates chaos. That gives people a green light to commit more crime because chaos creates dismissals, and dismissals is de facto decriminalization. And so you're when we start doing other things, I mean, the Vera Institute, which is supposed to be an expert in this area, says, well, any reform is going to have a 40% failure to appear rate, and that should be okay. A 40% failure to appear rate creates, I mean, the collapse of the criminal justice system because there's so much pressure to dismiss cases to prevent it. So it, I mean, we've got experts or proposed that people who are claiming to be experts who are nothing of the sort.
Okay, so you know, I'm a lie detection deception detection person. That is my jam. That's what I'm called to speak around the country on. So who lies to you in your world, and what do they tell you?
Ooh, you know, the very first lie that I had in the bail bond world was at a complaint hearing. Because I was a young attorney in the bail world and I was representing everybody because I wanted to get a name. Ken will fight for you. And so I wanted everybody to say they will, you should hire Ken. So someone called me and hired me, and they said, they're accusing me of referring a defendant to an attorney, which bondsmen can't do in certain counties. They can't refer people to attorneys. And they said, I did not do it. I did not do it. I'm like, okay, I will defend you. I will stand up for you. First piece of evidence at the hearing was a recorded conversation at the jail that said, I would get in a lot
Oh.
you ever found out that I told you this, but I would hire this attorney. And so, right in the middle of the hearing, where I've told them that this did not happen, and I'm standing up and fighting for my client, and I've just been proven a liar. And, you know, bondsman, once you're proved a liar, you're not just a liar like everybody else. You're a bondsman who's a liar. And I'm a bondsman's attorney who's a liar.
Yeah.
So it makes it very difficult to resolve issues when you've just been proved a liar. And so we took a break.
Yeah.
And I immediately started negotiating and said, we're so sorry. I'm so sorry that I've just discovered that my client lied to me, and how can we get this resolved? And so we got it resolved and we never went back to the hearing. And that was a valuable lesson because it's a fine line between truth-sayer, like you said, and defending your client. Because I've had a really, really bad hearing with a bail bond board where I thought they were trying to run my client out of the county for no good reason. And so I violated every rule that you say. I stood up at the first in opening statement. I said, we're going to find out today whether y'all are part of the conspiracy to run my client out of town or whether you've been fooled by the conspiracy. And so, I mean, that's just in the last 3 years. I mean, I've got to make sure my client's not lying to me to make that argument. And ultimately we won and we got that resolved.
Wow. Okay. So when clients are lying to you, like, do you ever have someone come sit down in front of you and you know they're lying, but you take the case or?
No, I mean, I don't.
How does it go, really?
No. Well, now I will tell you, I've been doing this long enough now that I have a little section in my presentation where I tell them, don't lie to me. I mean, just because you screwed up doesn't mean it can't be fixed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but if you lie to me, you're a bondsman. Then you're a bondsman who's been proven to be a liar. And if you, and then I'm the, you know, gosh darn bondsman's lying attorney. And so, so I don't know. Maybe I've gotten better at whether somebody's lying to me, but I give them that speech and I'm really stern about it. So I just assume that if you get past that, you're not lying to me. Because I've had people after I've given that speech have said, well, I need to tell you something.
Oh, wow.
So, but you know, I mean, we're human. I mean, in the bail world, the boards, the people that regulate us just want to know that you are taking care of business. If you screwed up, then you fixed it. They're not looking to be punitive. They're just looking to make sure you're doing your job.
Wow. Any other crazy stories like from the industry that you can let us in on?
Well, you know, there's so many crazy stories. I'm trying to think, you know, bondsmen are not their best representatives at times, you know, like, you know, if there's a complaint that we didn't return collateral and then some, you know, the bondsman has an employee that stole it, you know, and it's not a good defense to say, well, yeah, I had it, but it was stolen by one of my employees. So that's not a good defense. But,
like collateral would be.
Okay. So the bond, you know, they give you some personal property to guarantee that they will pay either the premium that's owed if there's a payment plan or
like a watch or a car or something like that.
Sure that the defendant will come back, stuff like that. But I mean, there's so many crazy stories. I can't even remember them all. We have, you know, we have a team that goes down to the legislature every week during the session. And we have a group that's been doing this so long where, we now get adjoining rooms and we've become in the last year, just little kids. I mean, I woke cause they like their room hot, cold. I mean, freezing cold. And I like my room normal. Mm-hmm. And so I got up at 2 a.m. one morning and I'm like, cause we have an adjoining room, the door's open. And I'm like, they've snuck into my room and they've lowered the thermostat. And I was like, oh my God. And I went over there and looked at it. No, they hadn't changed it. But then I'm like, well, it's 2 a.m. I can sneak into their room.
Wait, who was in the other room now?
A part of our team that was at the legislature. And so I was like, I can go in their room and then mess around with them and raise their thermostat. So they'll get hot. And so that's exactly what I did, like a little 2-year-old. And then for the rest of the session, every week we'd be playing practical jokes on each other, like little kids. And, you know, like I'm 63 years old. So, but that's just part of the fun, the camaraderie, the way you get along with each other and the way you have each other's backs. I mean, you can just go on and on and on for them. I mean, I work for some great people, some great insurance companies from out of state, like, you know, companies from California. AIA is a great client and they're great people. And they, you know, they, you know, when they get in trouble, they're like, what does Ken suggest that we do? Mm-hmm. And let's do it. And, you know, that's, you know, when somebody does that, you know, it's a great compliment. And I've been doing this long enough now where, you know, I will call some a bondsman that I haven't talked to in a long time, and they'll say, "What's wrong? What's wrong?" And I'm like, "What are you talking about? I've got a relative who's in your jail, or a distant friend that's in your jail, and they were wanting help with getting a bond." They're like, "Oh, I heard Ken Good was calling me, so I just assumed I was in trouble." I was like,
Now, what would these insurance companies call you
well,
when
they
you're out
would
of jail?
have agents to be licensed, or they have agents that are having issues with a bond forfeiture, or they just have an issue and they want to know what Texas law is. And so they call me and ask me what the what their how what is their solution. And so I give them what Texas law requires.
So, how can people get a hold of you? Like, how are they gonna know when it's time to call Ken? Or like, can you give them some stipulations on like when people should get a hold of you and how can they do that?
Well, this isn't a commercial about Ken. I mean, this isn't, you
Well, no,
know, I
it is,
mean, but
but
if
right
people
now it
want
is.
information about me, they can go to the PBTX.com website, which is the Professional Bondsman of Texas. We have our own blog there. We have our own podcast called The Bail Post, which is just talking about criminal justice issues. So we try to educate legislators, the public, and, you know, other states about what the different bail reforms are that have been tried. What's the result? You know, like, what's the New Jersey plan? We have a whole episode on what the New Jersey plan is and how it worked and how expensive it was. And the reason why you haven't had any other state propose it is because it was so expensive. And so we do stuff like that. We have two episodes a month, and it's always a criminal justice issue. And I write a lot of articles talking about these issues. And so I've written probably a dozen articles just for the Attorney at Law magazine, and I'm very blessed to have people accept my articles to be published.
Wow. All right. You heard it here. Ken's a smart dude. And you're putting out a lot of cool stuff so people can actually be informed. Hopefully, you know, they won't need you, but we know where to go in case we do.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's been great. It's nice to meet you.
Yeah, it's been great to meet you too. Thanks for coming on Truth, Lies, and Cover-Ups.